Okay, winter is on the way, and if you listen to this show, you know there's only one product that I absolutely rely on when I get a sore throat or a scratchy throat, and that's the delicious Pine Brothers Softish Throat Drops. Now, it's the only throat drop that is ranked number one in throat coating action, number one. And I mean, you can literally feel it, that coating of your throat, with their gum acacia, their plant glycerin, and of course, their delicious natural flavors. Now, they're amazing. My favorite is wild cherry and licorice. I also love the honey and licorice. Now, I've turned a lot of people onto Pine Brothers. You want to know the first three things that come out of their mouth? One, they're delicious. I can feel them coat my throat, and wow, they're soft, almost like a gummy bear. Yeah, I know they're soft. That's why they're called Pine Brothers Softish Throat Drops. Now, work with me, people. So this season, look, you're going to have some throat issues, and do what I do to soothe my golden throat. I use Pine Brothers Throat Drops. You will love this product. It's worth every penny. You can find Pine Brothers at CVS, Select, Walmart, Target, ShopRite. Why? Because they are the best. Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast.
Just last week, he confirmed to the National Review that he is again considering a run in 2016.
Do it. Do it. Look at me. Do it. I will personally write you a campaign check now on behalf of this country, which does not want you to be president, but which badly wants you to run.
Donald Trump has been saying that he will run for president as a Republican, which is surprising since I just assumed he was running as a joke.
Is that people think that Donald Trump is a clown.
Donald Trump is a clown.
I mean, does anybody seriously think that Donald Trump is serious about running for president?
Donald Trump, you know, he's a clown.
Which Republican candidate has the best chance of winning the general election?
Of the declared ones right now, Donald Trump.
President Obama will go down as perhaps the worst president in the history of the United States! Exclamation point. At real Donald Trump. Well, at real Donald Trump, at least I will go down as a president.
So basically, this is the beginning of the end for Trump.
The beginning of the end.
Beginning of the end?
This is probably starting of the beginning of the end for Donald Trump.
Donald, you're not going to be able to insult your way to the presidency.
The strongest person usually isn't the loudest one in the room.
So right now we have Hillary's about a 75 or an 80% favorite. We have different versions of forecasts you can look at.
Poll has Hillary Clinton up by double digits nationally, 12 points, 50 to 38 in a four-way race.
Clinton leading in Florida, Clinton leading in North Carolina, Clinton leading in Ohio, Clinton leading in Nevada. I could go on and on and on.
I continue to believe Mr. Trump will not be president.
And so, right now, Mr. Trump, to answer your call for political honesty, I just want to say, you're not going to be president, all right? It's been fun. It's been great. I love you. But come on, buddy.
We have a major projection right now. Donald Trump will take Ohio. And CNN projects Donald Trump will carry the state of Florida. Huge win for Donald Trump. Donald Trump, while we project, will win in Kentucky, in Indiana, with its 11 electoral votes. West Virginia, Florida, Tennessee, Mississippi, South Carolina, Alabama, North Dakota, with its 3 electoral votes, and South Dakota, Texas, Arkansas, Louisiana, the state of Montana, North Carolina, Georgia, Iowa, Utah, Wisconsin, Arizona, Kansas, with its 6 electoral votes, Nebraska, with its 5 electoral votes, and Wyoming, with its 3 electoral votes.
Sorry to keep you waiting. Complicated business.
A lot of people have laughed at me over the years. Now they're not laughing so much, I'll tell you.
No, they're not laughing now, are they? They are in a total freakout mode. Glad you are with us. Write down our toll-free telephone number if you want to be a part of this extravaganza. You know, we've got to define this movement. And, you know, for years we've had what I would call the alt-radical left. You know, I never heard the term alt-right. What is alt-right? Okay, I'll tell you what alt-radical left is. All these lunatics, thousands of them in front of Trump Towers, it's the lunatics that are now suggesting that they are going to protest the inauguration as if it's going to make any difference. The alt-radical left in a meltdown, the alt-radical left media in a meltdown. We're going to get into all of this today. And it's going to, let me tell you what this whole thing is going to come down to. It's going to come down to Donald Trump fulfilling his promises. And that is, if he follows up, look, if he does these things, if he appoints originalists to the Supreme Court, if he allows repatriation of trillions and one of the lowest corporate tax rates in the industrialized world, if he opens up the energy resources of this country, if he eliminates Obamacare and replaces it with free market health care options, which will dramatically lower costs for you, the consumer, if he sends education back to the states with a specific promise, especially to inner city America, that finally you'll have the schools that you deserve and have needed for all this time. If he builds the wall, you know, I watched 60 Minutes last night. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to build the wall. Yeah. Well, some say you might put a fence. Well, in some areas, it may only need a fence, but, you know, yeah, I'm building the wall. He's going back on his promises. No, he's not. No, he doubled down on them. And, you know, the fact that people are I'll give you another example on health care. Okay, you said, yeah, up to 26 years old, you can stay on your mom and dad's insurance while you're getting started in your adult life after you finally graduate college and realize that credit cards actually have to be paid by yourself, not mommy and daddy. Yeah, it may take you a couple of years, so that they'll keep that. And he said he'll keep pre-existing conditions. That was in every single solitary replacement health care bill that Republicans put forward. But the media doesn't tell you that either. But back to my point, if he follows up on his agenda, those things I just mentioned, if he creates safe zones instead of bringing in or risking bringing in people that come from countries that think it's okay to tell women how to dress, that women can't drive, that think it's okay to kill gays and lesbians. In other words, values that contradict our constitutional values. If he extremely vets these people, sets up safe zones, etc., he will be a successful president, enormously successful. If he remembers that this election is about what I said on Wednesday of last week, it's about the forgotten man, the people that have been left behind and screwed over by corruption in Washington, D.C., he will be a successful president. My job, as I see it, these next 4 years, and for all of you in the media speculating, Hannity's going to run the FCC. Hannity's going to be the press secretary. Hannity, by the way, if this election had gone the other way, let me tell you where we'd be right now. It would be one written obituary about my career after another, which, by the way, happened in 2012, which happened in 2008, which happened in 2004, which happened in 2000. You know, these people are just so ignorant. But, it's neither here nor there. That is my message to Trump. Keep your promises. Do I like him as a person? Did I get to know him? Yeah, I do. That's subordinate to the bigger issue for me. Is that this election wasn't about, for me, Donald Trump. He was the vehicle advancing ideas, big ideas, an alternative vision that I agree with, which is why I supported him as strongly as I did. If he keeps his promises, we will applaud him. If he goes off track, we will hold him accountable and we will call it out. That's how it's going to be on this program. That's how it's going to be on Hannity, the TV show. I want the problems of this country fixed. I want the forgotten men and women that went out in record numbers in droves to vote for him. I want their problems solved to the best of his ability. His agenda is a great start. It would transform the country in a positive way. Hillary would have doubled down on stupid and mediocrity at best, failure at a very high level. And that's why the media was so wrong. The media, you know, they live in their bubble. I actually tweeted out this weekend. Did you see my tweet, you know, battling that little pipsqueak over at CNN? But my point was, I said in one of my tweets, did you notice I said, most TV people are way overpaid. Remember I said almost all of them. Now, Hannity, how could you admit that? How do you admit that you know, you guys are overpaid? Because it's a fact. It is an indisputable fact. And so, unfortunately, most of these people didn't spend a couple of decades in their life like I did, doing all the dirty jobs that I did. By the way, I always forget to mention that I clean buses. My buddy Gomez reminded me that I once cleaned buses for a summer. I cleaned them. Yeah, you had to undo the toilets, you know, those big travel buses, Greyhounds. And then I drove them. I didn't even have a license to drive it. Not to pick up passengers. But I drive it in the parking lot. I had no idea how to drive that stupid thing. It's amazing I never cracked it. Amazing I didn't destroy it. So all those jobs, I think, have kept me somewhat grounded. I mean, I know some of you say, you're just a dopey media guy, whatever. I don't care. But for me, this is my life, what my life would have been if I was back in my 20s, my early 20s, and I wanted hope, and I wanted my dreams fulfilled, and I wanted opportunity. That's the forgotten man. These people in Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio, Pennsylvania, they don't want any more than the rungs and the ladder put back. And if the rungs and the ladder are put back, that means they can climb it. But look at what Harry Reid is out there. The election of Donald Trump has emboldened the forces of hate and bigotry in America. You know, white nationalists Vladimir Putin and ISIS are celebrating Trump's victory, while innocent, law-abiding Americans are racked with fear, especially African-Americans, Hispanics, American Muslims, LGBT. It's just a lie. It is hysteria. The hysteria has gotten so bad, this alt-radical left, which, by the way, remember, Black Lives Matter was invited to the Obama White House how many times? Embraced by Hillary Clinton? This alt-radical left has been embraced by the highest levels of power. Black Lives Matter, pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon. What do we want? Dead cops. When do we want them now? Why would that group ever get access to the White House? Or the Occupy movement? Or the Move On movement? That's the alt-radical Obama-Hillary Clinton left. Well, now the Secret Service sadly has to investigate Twitter assassination threats against Donald Trump. You know, you've got the media, you've got all these examples. Black freshmen at the University of Pennsylvania found violent, racist, thoroughly disgusting messages on their phones Friday after they were added to a racist GroupMe account. And according to the university president of engineering, students discovered the name of the president-elect written on the door of a prayer room for Muslims, et cetera, et cetera. Another student said they were terrified to see racist graffiti. Now, that would be unacceptable, as Donald Trump said last night on 60 Minutes. Stop. You know, but Leslie Stahl kind of failed to ask Donald Trump about the wave of hate crimes directed against him and Trump supporters. Some hate speech, some actual physical violence that has been chronicled. She failed to ask about the wave of assassination threats directed at Donald Trump and Mike Pence on Twitter. She apparently wasn't concerned about the anti-Trump demonstrators marching around shouting F the police, F Donald Trump, a rap song out there that contains a three-word lyric, F Donald Trump, F Donald Trump. The entire song is it. I guess Leslie didn't hear about that one. You know, it's, you know, all of this double standard out here. Well, look at the protest. Can you imagine if Trump lost and people, can you imagine working people taking to the streets? It wouldn't have happened unless it was stolen. Now you've got reports that George Soros's group, one of the groups that he supports, Democracy Alliance, meeting in D.C., and their purpose is to raise as much money to attack Donald Trump. You know, you got Republicans calling Obama and Clinton now to reel in these Soros rent-a-rioters. You saw the buses on TV lined up one after another. Let's bus them in. Well, that's just great. Now you've got the outright false lying narrative against Steve Bannon, who along with Reince Priebus have both gotten high positions in the Trump administration. And it signals that white supremacists will be. I've known Steve Bannon for years. It is a lie. Just like all that they told you about Trump was a lie. You know, all of this is to scare the living daylights out of you. All of this is to create an impression just like during the election. The attempts now to disenfranchise the Trump agenda has begun. The radical left will be on display just like during the Bush years, probably now on steroids as they plan protests for the inauguration. You know, you got Portland rioters literally attacking. There was an article that came out on a Facebook post I saw on this, a woman with a baseball bat. I saw that. You got Connecticut police arrest two for brutally assaulting a Trump supporter. You know, it's you got protesters occupy, I guess, Chucky Schumer's office, blasting Wall Street ties. All of this, in part, is because of a media narrative that has always been based and predicated on an outright lie. By the way, Joe Manchin, I want to get in touch with Joe Manchin. We'll put him on the show. He slammed Harry Reid on Trump's comments that it's an embarrassment. Where are the rest of these people? CBS held back a clip of Trump condemning attacks on minorities. Why would they do that? You know, we saw some of it. You know, they chose to release a quote of the issue, and that's about it. You know, it's unbelievable how these people in the media, and we're going to get into that, as a matter of fact, when we get back. I'll be joined by a Fox colleague. Ainsley Earhart is here. Then we have Nigel Farage is going to stop by. And then Kellyanne Conway stopping by. And we'll get to all of that and your calls today, 800-941-SEAN, if you want to be a part of the program, because there's so much to discuss today. Media, corruption at the top of the list. Alt-left, radical left, supported by Obama and Hillary in a complete meltdown. You know, what is the most important thing for Donald Trump to focus on? His agenda.
A lot of people have no idea that Trump is headed for a historic defeat. That's why I think the larger the defeat, in a sense, the healthier it will be for the Republican Party, at least if it doesn't bring Paul Ryan's speakership down with him and there's a kind of healthy divided government, because it might be a wake-up call to those Republicans who have existed in this little thought bubble of their own that this isn't a winning form of politics.
Then this election, not only does Florida fall to Hillary Clinton, but this election overall, we could be talking landslide. And so
Hillary Clinton today is more likely to win in a landslide that would not only have an impact on this race, but realign the country politically to some extent than Donald Trump is to win narrowly or at all.
Is. I mean, let's say it is a 4-point margin. That would translate to an electoral majority and probably electoral landslide for Hillary Clinton.
So, margin of error, margin of error. This could be tight. Or it could be a landslide for Hillary.
Okay, so everybody is saying, most analysts are saying that Hillary Clinton's going to win in a landslide and that Ohio won't much matter this time around.
Yeah. If this collapse of support among women that you talked about, Senator, if that spreads among women voters all across the country, he's going to lose by a landslide and they could lose the Senate and the House.
GOP officials now fear that if Donald Trump loses by a landslide, he could take down their congressional majorities with him.
Not only am I concerned about the presidential race, I'm concerned about what the impact on down ballot races, including
being overly cautious just because I'm trying to be a little risk averse in my predictions. But I think that she's going to have a very good night.
So the technical term for that, if she's anywhere near your prediction, would be blowout.
Landslide. I give a landslide. I don't know.
You call that a landslide.
I would say a landslide. I would say a landslide.
My bad.
That's a shellacking, actually. That's a shellacking.
All right, 24 now till the top of the hour, 800-941-SEAN, our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. How can the media be so wrong and so arrogant and so abusive of you, the American people? I mean, the New York Times publisher, we're vowing to rededicate our paper to reporting honestly. Well, now the public has a loathing of the press. As I said back in 08, journalism is dead, and it is. And, you know, Michael Goodwin from the New York Post had a good article, mandate to bust media bias. Cheryl Atkinson said the New York Times refused to run negative stories on Hillary Clinton. Donald Trump talked about their highly inaccurate coverage. Oh, and then you got the pipsqueak over at CNN. Brian Stelter, well, he calls out for the media to do some soul searching. Hey, maybe you want to search your own soul over there at CNN after people at CNN were giving questions ahead of debates to Hillary Clinton and you were seeking out questions for Donald Trump from the DNC. Anyway, a colleague of mine is in studio. You may remember for many years, Ainsley worked very closely on Hannity's America that we had on the Fox News channel. Many down in Panama City Beach really remember Ainsley for her coverage of spring break. Because we got the laws changed down there.
They hate us.
No,
bar owners hate us down there.
The bar owners hate us down there because the laws changed. But you did all the hard work, and you've always been a good friend. Now she is the host of the number one cable morning show, Fox and Friends, with two other friends, Brian and Steve. Brian, what's the last name?
Brian Kilmeade and Steve Ducey.
Yeah. No, I know their names. Okay. But, you know, one of the things, before I get your thoughts on all this media, because it's become such a big issue, I think this is the most incredible graphics I've ever seen for a children's book.
Aw, thank you.
And you've come out, it's called Take Heart, My Child, The Mother's Dream.
Yeah.
So I actually read your book this weekend.
Thank you.
All right. And here's what I took out of it. I'm saying, all right, so I've been so jacked up for so long over this election.
I know.
All right, so I'm reading through the book, and I'm thumbing through the book, and you have, what, a one-year-old daughter, right?
Exactly. Yes, and Hayden.
Hayden is your daughter. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so the book is called Take Heart, My Child, A Mother's Dream. And the illustrations are phenomenal. And the cover is phenomenal. As a matter of fact, I put it on Hannity.com. And by the way, this will make a great Christmas gift for a child that's in your life. It's such a good book to read with your child. Tonight. So the book starts out, before you were born, before you came to be, I dreamed a love song on a butterfly sea. The waters that day whispered truths in my ears of hopes for you, love, for your life through the years. May your feet trace new patterns on warm sandy shores. May you dive into waves and yearn to explore. But if you get lost in the ocean's vast tides, take heart, my child, I'll be by your side. And then you go through a series of other analogies in the book. It is such a cool book. And as I'm reading this, I'm thinking, I have totally lost my perspective on life. Because I remembered when my daughter, for example, was a baby. This was the most important thing. So tell us about, where did the idea for the book come from?
Well, when I was growing up, my father, who was a basketball coach at Wofford College when we were really little, he left because he had to put three kids through school, and he was gone a lot, and the money wasn't as great as he probably needed to. His goal was to, he put himself through college, so he wanted to put all three of us through college. That was his goal. So he left his job that he loved, coaching, to go work in sales, and was successful with this company, but he sacrificed so much for us. And mom was a school teacher who also sacrificed, obviously, had food on the table every night. We had a great childhood. I don't know how they did it, raising three kids, now that I'm a mom of my own. But mom would go to school at 7. She had to be at school at 7:30 to be there for the kids. So dad was in charge of breakfast. And we walked downstairs.
Did he make good? I was the best breakfast maker in my family.
Oh, you were?
Did he make pancakes, French toast,
Mickey
bacon?
Mickey Mouse pancakes.
He made Mickey.
The little tiny Mickey Mouse pancakes. That's all dads know how to do. Order pizza and make pancakes.
No.
Are you a good cook?
I'm a great cook. I mean, especially for breakfast.
All right. So dad did this. And next to our cereal bowls, he had all the bowls in front of our stools. We had this big chopping block in the middle of our kitchen, island. And we each had our stool. So we had the cereal bowls in front with all the cereal boxes displayed. And
what was your favorite cereal?
The gallon of milk. We weren't allowed to have sugar cereal. So I had Raisin Bran until my baby brother was born. And then
he
anything
got
goes. Oh, yeah. The baby.
I was the baby in my family.
What'd you like? I liked Lucky Charms.
I only liked the marshmallows.
Yeah, me too.
I'd wipe out the marshmallows and everyone would know I stole. Right. No, my favorite, I like cornflakes, Rice Krispies.
Oh, see, you are a healthy eater.
No, but my favorite is Frosty Flakes.
No, it's not Frosty.
It's Frosted Flakes. Okay, but I would put extra honey or sugar on all of them, like a ton. Like at the end of a bowl of Rice Krispies.
Well, then you might as well have bought the sugary cereal.
No, I just made them sugary myself,
right.
So it was no big deal.
So dad would put a saying next to our cereal bowl, Sean, every morning.
Right.
A saying, a scripture, something that someone famous had said, a poem, just something, a little nugget for us to take to school.
I hope somebody does that for Donald Trump in the White House.
Maybe that's your job.
A saying a day.
That's your job.
Thanks a lot.
Right. Stay calm and carry on.
Yeah.
All of those little notes, I went to meet with the publishers. I'd written a totally different book about my dog, and I went to meet with Simon & Schuster. They've been amazing. Sitting in a room full of amazing women who run Aladdin, which is their children's division, and I'm sitting around this banquet table, and they asked me about myself. And they asked me about reporting on ISIS and some of the hard stuff that we have to talk about at work. And I said, you know, a scripture comes to mind, and it is a scripture that's included in the back of the book, and hence the name of the book, The scripture is, I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace in this world. So you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. And I said, I am reminded of that all the time when there's bad stuff to report. And they said, that's it. That's the name of your children's book, Take Heart. And we added my child because they didn't know this until the next meeting. I was pregnant. And didn't know if I was having a little girl or a little boy, but I wanted to write this book. I started telling them about my dad and that story, and they said, you need to write, you need to sit down and rewrite this book, and we need to make it all about your dad and his sayings and
the lessons you want to pass on. Well, there's a great story you tell at the end of the book about your dad.
Thank you.
And you wanted to be a cheerleader.
Oh, yeah.
In seventh grade.
Mm-hmm. I was in seventh grade.
Oh, you didn't make it in eighth grade.
I didn't make it in eighth grade.
Okay. Now, I read that. I'm thinking, how stupid are they? Now they're regretting it. You're Ainsley Earhart, the host of Fox and Friends. But I'm thinking, you know what? That is a huge disappointment for a kid.
Right.
So what did your dad do?
So I was upset. There were six of us that didn't make the team. We had two different teams because there were so many cheerleaders in seventh grade. They narrowed it down to one team. Honestly, my mom told me later, she said we were shocked that you even made the team in seventh grade because I am not athletic, not very athletic.
You're
I was kind of middle of the road. I am not flexible at
all. That's right.
Like,
I saw you the day.
Listen.
Remember the day that, Tracy Austin was on your set and I walked over because I was in early to interview Trump that morning?
Well, okay, audience. This is Sean Hannity, whose kids are ranked like number one in the state of New York. He plays tennis every day, and he thought I should beat Tracy Austin.
That's an exaggeration.
Okay, I have never claimed to be the best athlete. I am a lot of fun. I look at life with rose-colored glasses, and I love God, and I love everyone. But I am not athletic.
Do you really love everyone? Because I don't love everyone.
I do. I love everyone.
I don't love everyone.
Everyone is God's child, though.
Okay, but there's so many people that are horrible people.
They make it harder to love.
Is that how you put it? Yeah. All right, so finish this. So you didn't make the cheerleading squad.
So I made the cheerleading team. So Dad picks me up from school. I didn't make it. And they were furious, my dad.
He was
mad
you didn't make it.
Papa Bear comes out. He's like, everyone should make it. Why would they do this to these girls? Everyone should make it. And I was crying on my bed, and my dad came upstairs, and he said, Ainsley, he said, I've been thinking about this. And he said, you are going to be fine. You're a strong person. You have confidence. You don't need to be a cheerleader in order to believe in yourself. Someone else does. Uh-huh. And God took that away from you because there are only X amount of spots, and he needed your spot for someone else. And he knew you would be okay. He didn't take it away from everyone else because they might not be okay. So you need to look at it that way. And I thought, wow. I would love to give my spot to someone else.
I wish
I'll
I was as
fine.
Smart as him. That's
a good spin. Yeah, right?
That's a good spin on not
spin.
Making the team.
Right,
I got it.
Right.
You know, but there are life lessons. One of the reasons you talk about my kids in tennis, and we're going to get to the media in a second for all you hardcore people out there saying, Hannity, what are you doing? All right, relax. But why I love tennis, and it's an individual sport, and I tell this to people, anybody that'll listen. And, you know, I try to play a little golf in my spare time. I'm not that good. But what I tell people is you learn to win. You learn to lose. The harder you work, the better you'll do. And it's really reflective of life's lessons. There's a picture that a friend of mine, Keith, took of my daughter being really upset after she lost a tennis match when she was little. Aww. Really, it's a great picture. I remember where it was and everything. And I had that picture blown up, and it's very similar. And I'm like, it's only a stupid tennis match. That's what I said to her. I said, but as long as I have two rules, try your hardest and win. If you don't win, don't come home. Are you listening?
Don't come home?
I'm kidding. It's
a
joke.
Okay.
No.
Where's the picture now?
Play fair. I have it in my house. I have it in my studio at home.
And what do you think of when you look at it today?
I think of how fast, you know, childhood goes by.
Gosh,
and I think of... You know, like my parents have been dead many years. I mean, but I can bring you some of those stories too. But I don't know. This book is really special. So
your parents would be so proud of you.
They would be shocked.
Did they ever see you on TV?
My father died 6 months after I started at Fox.
What was his?
By the way, you notice you bring in the host of Fox and Friends. She starts interviewing the host of the Sean Hannity show. Is that the way this is supposed to go?
Well, these are everyone tunes in to listen to you. They want to hear your story.
Well, no, but anyway, so.
And you have a great story.
Do you read to your daughter every night before she
I
goes
do.
To bed?
And we say our prayers every night.
Every night, but
every
she's
night.
1 year old. Does she know? Does she like? For example, do you read this book, "Take Heart, My Child: A Mother's Dream," to her?
Well, okay. So when I got the first copy in the mail. I sat down. I waited.
Right.
I wanted to read it in her nursery. So I waited till I got home. I think it was shipped to my office. I took it home and I sat in her nursery and I read it out loud.
Right.
And I was fighting back the tears. At the end of the book, I'm weeping. First of all, I'm hormonal because I'm having a baby. But it was just so cool how I have so many blessings. And this was just icing on the cake. And in 1 year, I really wanted a child for a long time, Sean. I had difficulties getting pregnant, and we had a miscarriage, and that was extremely difficult. It was a little girl, and then a few months later I got pregnant with Hayden. So
right.
That was a great way to, my parents kept saying, you know, we wouldn't have Hayden if you hadn't gone through that. So, you know, it's always about perspective.
Now I met your mom and dad.
Yeah, they love you.
No, they were awesome. They were really
thank you.
Your mom's so funny, the way she talks cracks me up.
How does she talk?
Ainsley. It's like she's from South Carolina.
She's from South Carolina.
Yeah,
in
but
South
I love
Carolina,
her. She's awesome.
She has the old Southern accent where it's like she says forehead. That means forehead.
Say it again.
Forehead. Ainsley, wipe your forehead.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And my grandmother used to
How did you get rid of your accent? Because you worked in Texas. You worked in South Carolina.
I mean, people in New York think that I have an accent. People hear that. But
really?
A lot of people. I remember meeting Sarah Palin when she was on your show years ago. And she came in and she said, Ainsley, she said, you have a Southern accent when I talk to you in person, but not. I don't hear it on air. I think I've trained myself to. I didn't mean to. I've just kind of trained myself to.
Sean has a New York accent. When I was in Alabama, I'd say, how you doing? Welcome to the Sean Hannity show.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah.
Did you lose it?
I worked hard at it, but I still, when I'm tired, it kicks in big, 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 big time. All right. Well,
so
anyway,
cute.
The book is, we got to talk about media, but it is a nice diversion. And when I read
Thank
it this
you.
Weekend, I was thinking back to my kids and when they were young. My son Patrick just turned 18 and my daughter just turned 15.
He's down in North Carolina.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
And we're really, you know, it goes by so fast. And then I realized that I have been so out of touch because of this crazy election.
Me too.
And I was like, you know, this was a really nice primer. I think it's the best graphics I've ever seen in any book. There's a great picture of you and your baby on the back of the book.
Yeah.
And if anyone wants to get it, it's a great, great gift for the holidays for, you know, maybe you're a grandma. You want to give it to your granddaughter, grandfather, give it to your granddaughter.
Yeah. And if they go on your website, I'm signing them right now. So you
can
buy one of these signed copies.
Yeah. You can buy the signed copies right now. Just go to Hannity.com. There's a banner we put up there. And it's also at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, your favorite bookseller. It's in bookstores as of tomorrow. All right. And it's called Take Heart, My Child. I want to talk to you about the media and how corrupt they are when we get back.
Here we are. And which Republican candidate has the best chance of winning the general election?
Of the declared ones right now, Donald Trump.
Donald Trump has been saying that he will run for president as a Republican, which is surprising since I just assumed he was running as a joke.
I continue to believe Mr. Trump will not be president.
Donald Trump will never be elected president of the United States.
Terrifying is that if he loses, which it looks like he's probably going to lose.
For a long time, people treated Donald Trump like he was a joke. Right now, it's a very serious drama. Trump said this is a moment of reckoning for our society. And he's right about that.
Mm-hmm.
If there is violence and unrest after Election Day, I think we now know why, based on the hatred that was dripping out of that man's mouth.
This is the most dangerous rhetoric that he has because it undercuts the very fundamentals and very foundation of our democracy in this country, going to the voting process. And
But if he's planning for riots, we need to plan for them.
But I don't look.
I mean, how are they going to react? It's setting us up, I think, for a spasm. There's a lot of groups that are going to be targeted in the spasm of violence that is likely to follow a Donald Trump loss. But I have never felt so uneasy as a Jew in America as I have watching.
Right now, a historic moment. We can now project the winner of the presidential race. CNN projects Donald Trump wins the presidency.
We don't fight. Who's going to fight for us? People had to die for freedom where we're at today. We can't just do rallies. We have to fight back. There will be casualties on both sides. There will be, because people have to die to make a change in this world.
Black lives matter. Black lives matter. Black lives matter.
Trump, no way. Racist, sexist, anti-gay. Donald Trump, no way.
Trump.
Yeah, he voted Trump.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Don't vote Trump.
But if he's planning for a liberal, planning for riots, we need to plan for the riots.
It's really not even funny. Write down our toll-free telephone number. If you want to be a part of the program, it's 800-941-SEAN if you want to join us. How could the media be so corrupt, so in bed with Hillary's campaign? They literally abused poor Bernie Sanders and colluded to take the election away from him. They colluded in terms of questions. They would seek out advice in the case of CNN. Well, what questions would you like us, DNC, to ask Donald Trump and everything else? And then, of course, the collusion on other fronts where questions were given to Hillary in advance. Joining us now, Kellyanne Conway, who is the campaign manager for Donald Trump throughout this process, a longtime friend of mine and somebody that really, really, I don't think you slept for, what, 2 months, 3 months? You didn't sleep at all.
Whatever I did or didn't do, Sean, it was completely worth it because we won. And the voters, really, America got what it's been asking pollsters for about three decades. Somebody who's outside the system, a total disruptor, someone who will go to Washington owing no one anything. And you know, frankly, somebody who in his everyday life as an entrepreneur, as a successful businessman, as a job creator is accountable. He has to come up with deliverables and product and quarterly reports and payrolls every week and benefits for his employees and just get things running on time, under budget, and on schedule. And that's what we need in a president, and that's what people wanted.
You know, I sent you a picture drawn by John McNaughton, who I happen to like. He draws patriotic paintings, religious themed paintings, and I really like the guy a lot. And he had what I think is his signature work, and he calls it The Forgotten Man. And it has all the presidents up to and including Obama. In Obama's case, he's actually stomping on the Constitution. And then you got this guy in a bench, you know, obviously depressed. Every rung in the ladder to climb to success has been taken away from him, hurt by government. And I kind of look at this as the forgotten man election. Does that make sense to you?
It makes complete sense. And in fact, it ended up being part of the closing statement that Donald Trump made to the people. Sean, he talked about the forgotten man and the forgotten woman. He talked about it at his Gettysburg speech. He talked about it. I was with him that last night when we went backwards. We went from Manchester, New Hampshire to Grand Rapids, Michigan, got home at 4:15 a.m. on actual election day. And he was talking that very night about how he had not created a typical political campaign. He had made a movement and that the forgotten man and forgotten woman thought they were part of it. Now, let's review who is not a forgotten man or forgotten woman. The lobbyists, the consultants, the donors, the party regulars, and in other words, the folks who are part of the professional consultant class. You know, I've talked to you for years, Sean, about what I call staff infection. The fact that we get the same people running the same campaigns again and again, the Republican candidates lose, and then the consultants always blame the candidates. Oh, I'm so brilliant, had they just listened to me. But this one's too old, that one was too stiff, that one didn't listen. It's like, guys, the other thing they all have in common is you, and we don't need you on this this effort, and we certainly don't want them to have outsized importance in the next administration. This is going to be, because this was a campaign about the forgotten man and forgotten woman, the people who believe the system is rigged and corrupt against them, they've got their nose pressing against the glass looking in. All they want, Sean, is an opportunity. All they want is a fair shake. All they want is for the system to work for everyone. And now you're going to see an administration really crafted in that same way.
You know, you see that. What do you make of the reaction? Everything from Harry Reid. I saw outside of Trump Tower all the people protesting. I was with you recently after the election, and people are trying to get in your grill and your face and yelling at you, and you challenged one guy, and you said, well, what exactly do you mean? And then they have no answer. And also the media's complicity here.
Well, it's very disappointing because as your fabulous montage before I came on to speak today, Sean, proves, the media just were not prepared for a Donald Trump victory. And shame on them. You know why? Because it means they don't get America. If you didn't see this coming, you don't see America for who it is. All of the clues and cues about the Donald Trump victory over Hillary Clinton were hiding in plain sight. Let's review. It's a change election. Over 70-72% of Americans say they want to take the country in a new and different direction. That choice was very clear. You've got someone representing the status quo of 30 years versus someone who literally is the embodiment of change and outsider disruption for Washington. And number two, all I ever talked about was Hillary Clinton's nagging, stubborn 46% ceiling. She just couldn't get anywhere near the 52-53% margins that Obama received twice in states like Michigan and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and frankly, Florida and Ohio and Iowa, all these states that Donald Trump won, that Romney and McCain lost. Number three, people cared about ethics and corruption. They care about good government. They care about honesty. And so when Hillary and the media, doing her biggest super PAC, I thought her most effective super PAC were the mainstream media, when they went and they said, she can't lose and she's got it wrapped up. She's got qualifications and experience. You know what Americans said? Hey, I think honesty and trustworthiness is a criterion. I think that's a qualification for president. I think the fact that people didn't trust her, they didn't like her, she had the email problem, the Clinton Foundation, it really was, this was the elites versus the rest of us election. And you know what people found out? There are a heck of a lot more of everyday people than there are of elites. But I blame the whole access, AXIS, of the consultants, the mainstream media. People just didn't want to see what America was saying. I think the election was of two complicated people with very simple ideas. She wanted the election to be about Donald Trump, and he wanted the election to be about the people.
It really did come across to me that way. You know, you and I had many behind-the-scenes conversations, and you always, in every conversation, said, look at her number. And your background is a pollster. I've interviewed you for years on polling information, and you said she never gets above 46%. She can't break that ceiling, and she never did, and it was worse than people anticipated. What did you think of the New York Times? Sheryl Atkinson pointed out rightly in her website, they refused to run negative stories on Hillary. Now the Times publisher is vowing to rededicate his paper to reporting honestly. You got that CNN little pipsqueak, what's his name, Stelter, you know, oh, it's time for soul searching. So I wrote him on Twitter and I said, will you admit that CNN was colluding with the Clinton campaign? That's a good, let's start with the soul searching at home. And of course, no answer. So I don't think the media is going to change. I mean, look at the attacks on Steve Bannon today. No. And I'm like, I've known Steve Bannon all these years. There's a great column by our friend David Horowitz that says all of this is nonsense, these charges against him. But they need something to continue the narrative, the false narrative they began.
Well, they do. By the way, it's now irresponsible. Everybody, they're still fighting the last war because they thought they had won it without a skirmish. And now they're not moving on to a peaceful transition into forming President Trump and Vice President Pence's government. They're fighting the election, so they're saying, oh, we've got to stop the madman. Look at these people around him. Look at these philosophies. It's crazy, Sean. You know that they had prepared for a Hillary victory and were already asking the likes of me 50 times a day, will he accept the election results? Will he encourage protesters to stand down and not wreak havoc? Will he be responsible and show respect for the office of the presidency? Okay, let's. You know what? We were asking the right questions about the wrong candidate and the wrong candidate's supporters. And I'm with Bernie Sanders on this. I saw he gave an interview today. Maybe it was on The View. Maybe it was somewhere else. But he gave an interview today where he said he was, you know, he thought it was a disgrace the way his party just can't connect with working men and working women. And this was his message. I mean, Hillary Clinton, she was shocked twice this year. First by Bernie Sanders. That should have been everyone's first clue that she didn't have the juice to do this. He was beating her handily in states like Michigan, which she ended up losing. And you turn around Iowa, which she ended up losing. And you turn around and you see, and he says, I'm connecting with working class men and women. She loses 22 states and millions of votes to Bernie Sanders. And then you got Donald Trump as her general election opponent, and the message was the same. I mean, the other thing I just wanted to mention is, I think people were shocked to see. I was actually astonished. I was happily astonished, but astonished nonetheless, Sean. Her closing arguments, Hillary Clinton's closing arguments, were all so negative. And by the way, coming from a woman, a female messenger to boot, nothing uplifting, nothing optimistic,
let
nothing
me say
visionary,
one thing.
Nothing.
You were the first woman to ever successfully run a presidential campaign. And I read your comments this weekend, and I thought they were very touching, because I know your husband. I know your kids. I had the best time playing football with your son in my studio during one of the busy nights you had, and you bring your kids with you. You should be very proud of that. And you said you're not a gender identity politics person, neither am I, but it is a huge accomplishment for you as the person, and I'm proud of you. And to me, the answer now going forward is simple. And I did have one conversation with President-elect Trump, I thought he encapsulated this well last night on 60 Minutes. He doesn't want a vacation. He wants to go to work. Just follow up,
right,
follow up on the promises. Yeah,
that's
I thought you were going to go to Florida. I thought you were going to take...
We'll go to Florida for the reelect. We have to win. I went to Florida plenty because it was 29 electoral votes.
By the way, for the record, you know, I guess there's something. My colleague Megyn Kelly wrote a book, and she says something like some suggestion that people got things. I've never been to a Donald Trump hotel. I've never been to a Donald Trump golf course. I've never been to a Donald Trump anything. I'm like, what? Why? Some people writing me today. Nothing. And I did it because I believe I want my fellow Americans to have opportunity again. I want the economy fixed.
Yes.
I want security. I want border security. I want Obamacare overturned. I want energy independence. I want lower tax cuts to stimulate the economy, education back to the states. I'm a pretty simple guy, Kellyanne.
And these were pretty simple messages. That's the thing. What cut through for Americans was a simple slogan, make America great again. Tax reduction, job creation, 25 million jobs over the next 10 years. Unleash energy independence, Sean, so we're not relying on foreign dictators, and we're creating jobs and lowering the price of fuel here at home. And also, what did he talk about? Vocational, technical, educational opportunities. Not everybody has college material. Great. Go get a skill set. Go get a skill certificate in high school and go support yourself and your family. He also talked about repealing and replacing Obamacare. Now, with a Republican Congress, the excuse of divided government is over.
Yeah, well said.
It's completely gone. And so he's talking about convening a special session on Inauguration Day after he's sworn in as president to get it done. This guy's going to get things done meaningfully and quickly.
Are you going to Washington with him?
Possibly.
Possibly.
Remember,
I'm insistent that you go. You need to be there.
Well, I appreciate that. It's been a great team. I mean, this has been an unbelievably solid and small core team of loyalists mm-hmm. who have worked together beautifully. You see what he's done with Ryan Priebus and Steve Bannon, elevating them to this shared power structure. We're all here together today in Trump Tower working on the transition. I'm very close to Vice President-elect Pence and his team. I mean, this is just a great team. And I have to say, it also means less is more. When I talk about that staff infection that happens at the consultancies. I mean, Hillary Clinton had like 8 times our staff and much more of our money, but it makes you feel gritty and focused. And you know what? It's very reflective of the American spirit and the way many Americans make tough choices and tend to manage their time and their resources in a way that is just smarter. You work harder, you work smarter. I think that's very indicative of how he's going to be in his administration.
Not
a single consultant got rich off his campaign. Go check the FEC reports. I think that's very Donald Trump as well, because it just shows you the way he's going to run his government. And I plan to be by his side in some capacity. He's asked me to do that, and I would be honored. It's for the country.
I think it's an honor that we have great people like you willing to serve. Kellyanne, it's...
Thank you, Sean.
I appreciate everything you've done. Thank you.
Take care.
All right, 800-941-SEAN. Nigel Farage, he is the leader of the Brexit movement. He'll join us, talk about the similarities of the alt-radical left going insane after their loss.
Donald Trump, just last week, he confirmed to the National Review that he is again considering a run in 2016.
Do it. Do it. Look at me. Do it. I will personally write you a campaign check now on behalf of this country, which does not want you to be president, but which badly wants you to run.
Donald Trump has been saying that he will run for president as a Republican, which is surprising since I just assumed he was running as a joke.
Is that people think that Donald Trump is a clown.
Donald Trump is a clown. I mean, does anybody seriously think that Donald Trump is serious about running for president?
Donald Trump, you know, he's a clown.
Which Republican candidate has the best chance of winning the general election?
Of the declared ones right now, Donald Trump.
President Obama will go down as perhaps the worst president in the history of the United States! Exclamation point. At real Donald Trump. Well, at real Donald Trump, at least I will go down as a president.
So basically, this is the beginning of the end for Trump.
The beginning of the end.
Beginning of the end?
This is probably starting of the beginning of the end for Donald Trump.
Donald, you're not going to be able to insult your way to the presidency.
The strongest person usually isn't the loudest one in the room.
So right now we have Hillary's about a 75 or an 80% favorite. We have different versions of forecasts you can look at.
Poll has Hillary Clinton up by double digits nationally, 12 points, 50-38 in a four-way race.
Clinton leading in Florida, Clinton leading in North Carolina, Clinton leading in Ohio, Clinton leading in Nevada. I could go on and on and on.
I continue to believe Mr. Trump will not be president.
And so, right now, Mr. Trump, to answer your call for political honesty, I just want to say, you're not going to be president, all right? It's been fun. It's been great. I love you. But come on, buddy.
We have a major projection right now. Donald Trump will take Ohio. CNN projects Donald Trump will carry the state of Florida. Huge win for Donald Trump. Donald Trump, while we project, will win in Kentucky, in Indiana, with its 11 electoral votes. West Virginia, Florida, Tennessee, Mississippi, South Carolina, Alabama, North Dakota, with its 3 electoral votes, and South Dakota, Texas, Arkansas, Louisiana, the state of Montana, North Carolina, Georgia, Iowa, Utah, Wisconsin, Arizona, Kansas with its 6 electoral votes, Nebraska with its 5 electoral votes, and Wyoming with its 3 electoral votes.
Sorry to keep you waiting. Complicated business.
A lot of people have laughed at me over the years. Now they're not laughing so much, I'll tell you.
There you have it. The media meltdown continues. By the way, this is getting beyond serious as the alt-radical left, led by Obama and Hillary Clinton, have lost their collective minds. I mean, Harry Reid, the election of Donald Trump has emboldened the forces of hate and bigotry in America. White House white nationalists, Vladimir Putin, ISIS are celebrating Trump's victory, while innocent law-abiding Americans are racked with fear, and it goes on from there. Secret Service now is spending more time investigating, quote, Twitter assassination threats against Donald Trump. The media has been ignoring all of these anti-Trump hate crimes that I've been describing to you. We've got Republicans now calling on Obama and Clinton to reel in the Soros renter rioters, the alt-left radicals. We'll see if any of that ends up being true or if they end up helping in any way, shape, matter, or form. And so much more that we have to get to, but there is mass hysteria that is broken out by the alt-left, the alt-radical left. Massive protests planned for his inauguration. Connecticut police arrest 2 for brutally assaulting Trump supporters. You got media to blame for the left's post-Trump freakout. And you've got Britain and France snubbing the EU's emergency Trump meeting. Wanda Sykes got booed after an anti-Trump, I guess, bit that she did. Joining us now, somebody who has experienced this, they're a little ahead of the curve with Brexit. He was the leading spokesperson, member of the European Parliament for southeast of England, campaign leader for the Brexit movement, and a friend of mine, who I admire greatly, Nigel Farage is with us. How are you, sir?
I'm good, and I'm just, it's like deja vu. Everything that's happening now in America, the way the media are portraying, you know, race hate crimes and yet don't portray crimes against Trump supporters, it reminds me of Brexit a few months ago.
You know, it really does. How bad did it get, and did it start to get better? Did they finally accept the results? I know that Great Britain now is having some court difficulties moving forward with Brexit.
You know, of those that voted Remain to stay in the European Union, I did a phone-in show the other day, just like you're doing now, and I said, I want to hear from you. If you are a Remain voter, ring me. If you accept the result or don't accept the result, 70% of people who voted Remain say, do you know what? We live in a democracy and we abide by the result. But the problem is, the real problem here is that some of the big businesses that want this globalist agenda will keep on playing. Some of the so-called liberal media will never give up. And, you know, you get the odd rock star and a few students. Funny, isn't it? I watched all those rioters outside Trump Tower when I was there the other day. I bet you none of them actually bothered to vote. They were too busy smoking drugs, you know.
I was there Saturday, and I got to tell you, there was a huge crowd, and it was getting cold when I got there.
Yeah, well, good. I mean, it's a shame it didn't rain, in my opinion.
Come on, that's funny.
Look, the problem is this. The problem is that the liberal elite took charge of the West over 20 years ago. They have been completely in control, and they just are not waking up and smelling the coffee. They're not recognizing that what is done is done. We now, in Britain, yeah, there are legal challenges. There are various things going on. But believe me, Brexit's going to happen, and Trump is president. And I would say to every one of those people that's been out protesting, now I wonder, are they Americans, or are they the same protesters we had in London who've been shipped over? I'm not sure. But either way, you know, you are a democratic country, and people need to accept the result. Donald J. Trump becomes president on January 20th.
He does, and he will. You know, Nigel, on a very serious note, I have called this the election of the forgotten man. And for the last year on this program, and I've sworn I'm not going to give the statistics out anymore because my audience knows them by heart, the American people have suffered greatly under these liberal leftist, alt-leftist policies of Obama. Obama has embraced the most radical elements like Black Lives Matter, Occupy Wall Street, MoveOn.org, etc., and they've embraced him and he's embraced them. And unfortunately, liberalism, leftism, globalism has not worked. And Americans, especially in the Rust Belt, were the victims of bad government policies that hurt them, took away their opportunities, and hurt their families. That's what this election was about. So to me, it's really about Donald Trump following up on the very things he promised in the election. If he does that, he will be a successful president.
No, he won't. He'll be a hero.
Yes, a hero. You're right.
He'd be an absolute hero. I had the privilege, Sean, as you know, of spending a bit of time with Donald Trump a couple of days ago. I met a very thoughtful, a very reflective man, and we talked about things. And I tell you something, his absolute sincerity in his heart that he wants to bring back jobs, he wants to make the lives of decent, ordinary people better, I did not doubt for a moment. I think his economic plans, the ideas he's working on, I think in a year's time, there'll be a lot of people who have been very critical of Trump who are going to say, do you know what? We're surprised. This man gets it. And let's remember, he's not a career politician. He's not part of that Washington swamp. He's an individual. He's a businessman. He's a personality. He's a character. He cares. And what I got from my meeting the other day is he's a proper human being. And I, do you know what? I'm actually, despite all the negative stories that we're hearing about protests and everything else, I'm actually very, very optimistic.
I'm extremely optimistic. I'll tell you why. I mean, simple things will have a profound impact on the economy. I mean, you see this, for example, in Ireland, because they have one of the lowest corporate tax rates in the industrialized world. And I know the rest of Europe has been pretty angry at Ireland, but Ireland has attracted a lot of business by having those low rates, by dropping the corporate tax rate. Some people don't understand. Corporations don't pay taxes. They pass the cost on to consumers. Secondly, if multinational corporations are incentivized at a low rate of 10% to bring back trillions, it'll be like a shot of adrenaline through our entire economic system, as will eliminating Obamacare and the push towards energy independence. That combination is just a prescription for great success.
I think that what Trump said, and because America has got the most ridiculous corporate tax rates in the world now, there's something like $2 trillion sitting in the Cayman Islands, sitting offshore. And I think if Trump does a deal with these companies on corporation tax and says, right, guys, we are now going to come to a deal, charge you a sensible rate for corporation tax, but in return, I want you to invest in research and technology. I want you to guarantee jobs for American workers. I tell you what, that's the biggest economic win-win ever. I think what he's doing on that is absolutely inspired.
I think, you know, it's just a formula for success. What do you think the impact is going to be on Great Britain when Brexit is fully enacted? What does it mean?
Well, I am British, but I spent much of my working life working for American companies. I've spent 35 years spending a lot of time in your country. I am all for the UK-US relationship being as close as it can be. Come on, guys, we're basically cousins. That's how I see it. Now, Obama resented the United Kingdom. He was against us. His first gesture as president,
Winston Churchill,
the bust of Winston Churchill from that Oval Office. And I, maybe a bit cheekily, but I did ask the president-elect when I was with him, I said, would you, as a sign of friendship with the UK and the whole English-speaking world, put that bust back in the Oval Office? And do you know what? His eyes lit up. He got it. He saw it. I want us, Sean, to have a close trade relationship. I want us to work together militarily, but no more Libyas, please. No more Libyas. And this is something that Trump gets. I'm very optimistic. And I tell you what, maybe slightly selfishly, a Trump administration that makes positive noises about the United Kingdom helps us, gives us a really strong hand in our renegotiation with the European Union.
You have, look, that relationship never ever should have deteriorated the way it did. And I, by the way, I'd love to see that bust back in the Oval Office as you would. And similarly, I would argue, Nigel, that what has happened with our relationship with Israel is tantamount to a foreign policy disaster. And now that will be repaired as well, I believe.
Well, Trump will put that right. Trump will have no more Libyas. And Trump, I think, intelligently is not saying that Putin's a great guy, but is saying, can we please stop provoking him? And look at the Ukraine. We had NATO and the European Union saying to the Ukraine, come and join us. You know, directly putting a threat on Russia's border, as the Russians saw it. And, you know, if you poke the Russian bear with a stick, don't be surprised when you get a reaction. And I think the Trump idea of flying to Moscow, meeting Putin, talking, and I'm going to bring it back to Churchill, because Churchill said many years ago, he said, jaw-jaw is better than war-war. And you know something? I think the world is a much safer place with President Trump than it would have been with President Clinton.
Nigel, blood, toil, sweat, and tears. Pretty good, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. Absolutely.
I'm trying my best, Nigel. If I can't make you laugh, I'm in...
Listen, it wasn't a
blood,
bad shot.
Toil, sweat, and tears. Yeah, but listen, there was no... You know, by the way, it is interesting. There is a similarity. I mean, he was known for having a little drink or two, Winston Churchill. He was known for his cigars, and he was known for his salty language. Am I correct?
You are absolutely right. And where I'm speaking to you from
And he
right
saved
now,
the free world at the time, but no minor detail.
Now, where I'm speaking to you from right now is 2 miles away from Chartwell, where Churchill lived. And I've grown up studying Churchill the man, Churchill the politician, Churchill the warrior. And I tell you what, anybody out there who's not read a couple of books on Winston Churchill, you've missed something. This was the greatest guy, I think, that ever lived. And important to remember, his mother was an American.
You know, it's also important to remember one of the more damning moments in history, biggest mistakes. Here he goes out in the middle in the Battle of Britain every day, while Britain is being bombed, to show confidence and bring confidence to the people, risking his own life. And then you guys throw him out after he wins the war. What was that all about?
I know. That was absolutely bizarre.
Bizarre.
I think basically they thought he was a great wartime leader, but maybe not a great peacetime leader. But either way, he's a great man. He loved Britain. He loved America.
He did.
And you know something?
The guests that would
in
never
the last
leave.
100 years, between us, have shared triumphs and tragedies. But if it wasn't for the British-American relationship, we would not have beaten the scourge of Nazism. We would not...
Fascism.
There's no way we could have stopped these terrible things. And I'm excited about having a president that recognizes that, that understands that. We've got a very strong, positive future together.
Well said. Let's play a little Winston Churchill for you as we close out. Nigel, thank you.
I will say it is to wage war by sea, land, and air with all our might and with all the strength that God can give us. To wage war against a monstrous tyranny never surpassed in the dark and lamentable catalogue of human crime. That is our policy. You ask, what is our aim? I can answer in one word.
Victory.
Victory.
Yes.
Victory at all costs.
All right, we got a Nigel, God bless you, my friend. Very historic. All right, as promised, let's get to our busy telephones here. We go to Fox News Radio 92.5 in Fort Myers, Florida. Frank is standing by. Frank, hi, how are you? Glad you called, sir.
Oh, great. Glad to talk to you for the first time.
Thank you, my friend. I'll be down there pretty soon to visit you. Go ahead. What's going on?
Well, I hope I get to see you. But here's what my concern is. After listening this weekend, I'm starting to get worried about Mr. Trump, how he's caving on a bunch of stuff already.
All right. What do you think he caved on that you don't like?
Well, he's taken off the Muslim ban off his website already, and I noticed that on Friday. Then...
Well, remember remember what he said? He said people coming from, and this was what he said during the campaign, because I followed it very, very closely. He originally made those comments, Muslim countries. It evolved into extreme vetting. Last night, he reiterated extreme vetting on 60 Minutes, and he said people that would come from countries that have cultures that are extremely different, basically the antithesis of our constitutional values. So I don't think he backed down at all. Now, the other claim is that on Obamacare, letting kids stay on the plans till 26, and what was the pre-existing conditions?
Yeah, pre-existing.
Okay, those were always in every single replacement bill that Republicans had offered. That was in single one of them, and he said it to me in interviews.
Right, but see, here's how, you know, and I know it's the media, you know, playing tricks on us, but they don't mention, I know it goes to, I agree with this, but the way the media portrays it is,
Hey, listen, this is the corrupt media I've been playing all day that said he would never be president and laughed at him. This is the same corrupt media that was colluding with the Clinton campaign and giving her debate questions and giving her editing ability of their stories at the New York Times and Politico and asking the DNC like they did at CNN what questions they wanted asked of Donald Trump. So, you know, remember, this is the same New York Times that wouldn't delve deep. We did the vetting that they wouldn't do. These are the same people in the media that wouldn't tell you what was happening with WikiLeaks. You know, we talked about it at length on this radio show, and we put it up every night on TV. You know, I know that the media will go nuts when I say this. I am by far, I'm not a journalist. I am a talk show host with opinions. Everybody knows where I'm coming from. They're not journalists. They are advocates, and they're dishonest. We are honest about what we do. This is the Clinton Server Foundation story, which we covered so extensively, and WikiLeaks, which we covered so extensively. If any objective, fair, balanced, you know, mainstream media personality would get down deep into the weeds of these things, they would be this generation's Woodward and Bernstein of Watergate fame. But they didn't want to do it because it didn't fit their political narrative. And as a result, all trust in the mainstream media is dead. I called it in 2008. I said, journalism is dead. Now everybody gets it. Everybody now, there's no ambiguity. You learned what I knew back in 08 in this election cycle and what I told you was happening. There is an informational crisis in America, although now Americans have choices. They get their information from websites, from blog sites, wherever they want. Talk radio, Fox News, whatever programs they like, they get to choose. And they know who's telling them the truth. And now we can vet them. And I'm going to do this tonight on my TV show. And they hate me, by the way. Absolutely. Look, let me be very blunt here. And I don't overstep. Rumors of my death are greatly exaggerated. There were obituaries pre-written for the day after Election Day of Donald Trump lost about me. Linda, true or false? We know for a fact. We know who would have written them. We know we would have been at war with those that sabotaged Donald Trump. I decided not to go there because my focus is on solving problems, getting Americans the jobs they deserve, the opportunities they deserve, fixing this broken country. I'm focused on that. You know, there'll be plenty of time if I really want to go through the list of people that I have zero respect for in terms of unfinished business in this campaign. But I'm more concerned. I want to see the guys in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Wisconsin, all over this country. The forgotten men and women that I talked about every single day with my statistics that I'm not allowed to talk about anymore because I beat them to death. That's what this election was about for me. That's it. Anyway, let's go back to our phones. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Let's go to Dallas, Texas. The answer, Chad is standing by. Chad, hi. How are you? And welcome to the program.
Doing good, Sean. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
When did you first think on Tuesday night election night that he had it in the bag? And who do you think, who are your picks for his top cabinet members?
I think you've got to put Rudy Giuliani in there. I mean, you know, I know maybe some people look at Rudy's views on socialism. Rudy governed New York City like a hardcore conservative. So I think he's probably up for state or AG. Pete Sessions, Senator Sessions, I think he'd be a fantastic choice. I'd like to see Rick Perry brought into the administration. I happen to be a big fan of the former governor of Texas.
He's an Aggie.
Yeah, he's an Aggie. I think the people around him that you see. Look, the problem is I have inside information, and I'm not at liberty to really discuss.
Right.
Let me be honest. But I think you're going to see a coalition of really bright, smart, intelligent people that are going to be focused on fixing problems. You know, what did I call it back in 2013 into 2014? Conservative solutions for America.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is not for me about Donald Trump. Donald Trump was the vehicle and laid out his vision and agenda that I agree with. To me, it's the agenda. To me, it's the problem solving. To me, it's getting the economy being fixed. the immigration situation being resolved, energy independence, mm-hmm. Obamacare eliminated, education back to the states. Don't start wars. Send people to fight, bleed, and die, and then pull the plug on them, or don't go at all. To me, it's about just basic, simple common sense. We can't invite people into the country if they think they have the right to tell women how to dress. Sorry. That goes against our constitutional values, or they think that gays and lesbians should be killed. Sorry, we're not going to tolerate their intolerance. Or if they persecute Christians or Jews, we're not going to bring it into the country. You know, that's what it's about for me. So my, you know, look, I'll support Donald Trump. And I'm going to be very clear about this. If Donald Trump, if he made a bad choice on a Supreme Court justice, if he doesn't build the wall, if he doesn't drop, if he doesn't push hard for the economic plan he outlined, if he doesn't repeal Obamacare, if he doesn't send education back to the states, make America, move to make America energy independent, there will be no louder critic than Sean Hannity. For me, it wasn't about Donald Trump. Personally, I love the guy. He's a great guy. Keep your promises. That's what I want. You know, what do you want, Hannity? All these people, why is everyone speculating? Oh, Hannity's going into the administration. No, I'm not. I have a contract and I have a job. And one of my jobs is to hold politicians' feet to the fire. Right now, Donald Trump has set up, I think, a prescription to solve many of America's problems and help you, the American people. My job now is to hold him to his promises. Because I believed him. I was telling liberals and, you know, never Trumpers people and all those lunatics out there sabotaging him, you own it. And I said, I'll own the promises Donald Trump made that I asked him so many times about. And if he doesn't keep his promises, I'm going to be mad and I'm going to feel disappointed. And I think he'd make a big mistake. But with that said, after I talked to him, I'm actually pretty convinced he's going to keep them. The vast majority of them. If he does six things, if he appoints originalists to the Supreme Court, if he builds the wall, if he really vets refugees and goes to safe zones instead, if he eliminates Obamacare with health savings accounts, and he makes us energy independent and sends education back to the states, that is so powerful. Those fundamentals, you know, think about like in sports. You want to be a great quarterback, unlike the Jets don't seem to have a quarterback that's working, which frustrates me. You got to be great at the fundamentals. I would tell people getting into the radio business, pay attention to the fundamentals. You know, how many times have you heard a guest host on a radio show? Okay, break. You want me to take a break now? Does that mean break? You kind of look like you're breaking a stick on, although you don't have a stick in your hand. Oh, okay. We're going to take a break, and we'll come back, and instead of preparing a little bit, all right, I'm so-and-so. I'm in for so-and-so. Here's our toll-free telephone number. When we come back, we'll get to your calls and comments. That's called fundamentals.
That's interesting. Interesting.
That's Alec Baldwin without the fundamentals. You know, I could have helped him. I would have been glad to offer him advice before he made a total imbecile out of himself.
When we come back, we have some time. Oh, great.
Oh, we have time. No break time.
Now, when can we take some calls, Ivan?
Mm-hmm. Whenever we want.
Do we have calls that are on there now?
No calls yet.
Nobody
what
calling.
What number do people call to get on the air, Ivan? Do we have that number?
It's right there.
do I have the call number in front of me? Oh, I'm so sorry. That's interesting. Interesting. At 1210 at PHT. Of course, any other questions you have, any other comments you have, call us to the, what else?
Uh-huh. What else?
Call us, please,
call
at 215-1210. Now, if you don't call, we're going to keep reading from the Scientology manual. You might not feel it. You might not feel the energy right now. You might not feel the swell of what's happening here. Do we have any calls yet there, Ivan? No calls. Let's read some more about Scientology. Is Sean Hannity a Scientologist? Alec Baldwin posing the big questions tonight here. Do we have any calls here yet, Ivan? None. Boy, it's just incredible. Unbelievable. Well, you leave us no choice, listeners.
That really happened. That was a real radio program. As a matter of fact, let me put it this way. The greatest radio talk show ever. How Not to Do a Radio Talk Show by Alec Baldwin. All right, Chad, we'll give you the last word. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's good. It's good. Sorry about your Jets. Cowboys are doing good. When are you getting back to Dallas, man?
Well, you know, I don't know. Phil Boyce, my former program director buddy, is begging me to go, and he's driving me nuts because I'm trying not to travel, but we're going to get down there when we can. I'm a little older now. I'm trying to travel less.
Well, you got to pick out a spot. It's up for grabs, right? Out of Florida, we got to get you here.
I already have a spot down in Florida. I need one in Dallas, or I need like a little baby ranch. I talked to Rick Perry once. I said I want to get a ranch one day and raise cattle. He goes, "Oh, I know the perfect place." I said, "Well, how big is it?" "Oh, 10 or 20,000 acres." I said, "No. I want the baby style ranch, the little itty bitty baby ranch one. You know, where I could ride my bike around the property and be exhausted. That would be enough room for me." Anyway, thank you, Michelle in Texas. Also, Michelle, how are you? Glad you called. We have about 45 seconds.
Sean, thank you. I made a vow to myself that when Trump won, I would call Sean Hannity and personally thank him for being a true patriot and true American.
I thank you. I thank the American people for this.
Well, thank you. In 2008, I was just as disappointed as you, but I realized the American people were sleeping. We weren't ready for a Trump then. But you, in these last 4 years, you've done an excellent job of exposing the corruption associated with the Obama administration, the Clinton campaign, and the liberal media. And I've been listening. I've been paying attention. I've been spreading the word. I've convinced many people to vote for Trump.
Good for you.
You know, and also I appreciate you adding two new words to my vocabulary, feckless and collusion.
Okay, I'm glad I could. You know, I want people to understand, and it was so much written about me before this election. People, Linda, they don't know me. They don't understand what drives this show. They don't understand what motivates me. And what I'm happiest about in this whole thing, and I'm not Pollyannish, is that we now have a chance to fix the mess. That's what I'm happy. People writing me, "Oh, you helped. I'm like, thank you very much. We all helped. We're all spokes in a wheel. You need every spoke to make the wheel go round. But the main spokes in the wheel were you, the American people, because you did not listen to an abusively biased media that was trying to corrupt your mind with propaganda and misinformation. So I'm so proud of all of you for not falling for that.